is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Our shared objective is to stop all polioviruses by 2023 and to integrate the polio infrastructure to strengthen broader disease surveillance and outbreak response systems, as well as immunization services.
That's World Health Organization Regional Director Matshidiso Moet on how 23 African states have experienced outbreaks of vaccine-derived poliovirus 2. Details coming up. Also, Cameroon and Nigeria have agreed to jointly fight separatists in both countries. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Gunmen in Nigeria have freed scores of students they kidnapped in May from an Islamic school in Niger State. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The head teacher of Salihu Tanko Islamiyah Seminary School in Niger State, Al-Hassan Abubakar, says the gunmen Thursday night released remaining students who had been held since May. Al-Hassan told local media the kidnappers dropped them off in neighboring Kaduna State. This Day Media reported the students are meeting Friday with Nigerian officials before being reunited with their families. Nigerian media report the families of the students twice paid ransoms to the bandits before their release. Armed men raided the school on May 30 and kidnapped 136 students. Nigerian media report 6 of the students died in captivity and 15 escaped in June. Gunmen on Sunday released 15 hostages from a July raid on a Baptist high school in northwest Kaduna State. A representative of the family told AFP they were released after a ransom was paid, but 56 of 121 students were still being held. Kidnapped for ransom criminal groups known locally as bandits have been targeting Nigerian schools in a series of brazen attacks. They have kidnapped more than 1,000 students since December from schools and colleges across northern Nigeria. Most have been freed through ransoms and negotiations, but scores are still being held in dense forests. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
African countries have committed to ending all forms of polio after cases of vaccine-derived polio increased last year, partly because of disruptions from the COVID-19 pandemic. In 2020, Africa was declared free of the wild polio virus after 4 years without a single case. But polio has since returned in communities where not enough children have received the polio vaccine. Ahmed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
African countries have committed to ending all forms of polio after cases of vaccine-derived polio increased last year, partly because of disruption from the COVID-19 pandemic. In 2020, Africa was declared free of the wild polio virus after 4 years without a single case. But polio has since returned in communities where not enough children have received the polio vaccine. Addressing a session of the World Health Organization's Regional Committee for Africa, the director of Uganda's Health Ministry, Hendy Mwabesa, said his country will carry out a national campaign to vaccinate children against polio before the end of the year.
The challenges we anticipate, of course, is the vaccine-induced hesitance, which has been common even with the COVID vaccines, and we expect it to continue during this period. But we'll try our best to mobilize the whole country. We'll try our best to mobilize the cultural leaders, the political leadership, and the professional associations to assist us to mobilize the communities to address the challenge of the hesitance, to make sure that all our children below 5 years have received this novel OPV.
The novel oral polio vaccine is key to stopping polio outbreaks. Last year, Africa was declared free of wild poliovirus. In the last 3 years, however, 23 African states have experienced outbreak of vaccine-derived poliovirus 2. That's a strain of weakened poliovirus that was included in the oral virus, but mutated over time, and now behaves like the wild or naturally occurring virus. WHO Regional Director Metshidiso Moeti said the continent needs to do more to eradicate that form of the poliovirus.
Our shared objective is to stop all polioviruses by 2023 and to integrate the polio infrastructure to strengthen broader disease surveillance and outbreak response systems, as well as immunization services.
Ethiopia has recorded 7 cases of poliovirus type 2 in 2021. The country's health minister, Lia Tedise, says her government is trying to address the current outbreaks.
We all agree that the quality of any campaign is as good as our quality of preparedness. So we follow our preparedness through these national coordination mechanisms using electronic data tools and self-assessment at the different levels within up to the districts. We also validate those assessments.
More than 100 million African children have been vaccinated against the poliovirus since July 2020, but many others missed the vaccinations due to the coronavirus pandemic. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
The challenges we anticipate, of course, is the vaccine-induced hesitance, which has been common even with the COVID vaccines, and we expect it to continue during this period. But we'll try our best to mobilize the whole country. We'll try our best to mobilize the cultural leaders, the political leadership, and the professional associations to assist us to mobilize the communities to address the challenge of the hesitance, to make sure that all our children below 5 years have received this novel OPV.
Our shared objective is to stop all polioviruses by 2023 and to integrate the polio infrastructure to strengthen broader disease surveillance and outbreak response systems, as well as immunization services.
We all agree that the quality of any campaign is as good as our quality of preparedness. So we follow our preparedness through these national coordination mechanisms using electronic data tools and self-assessment at the different levels within up to the districts, and then validate those assessments.
Libyan Foreign Minister Nagla Mangouche has spoken with UN Special Envoy Jan Kobis about preparations for elections in December, the need to unify the military, ways to enhance the ceasefire agreement, and a potential international conference on the country's stability. Meanwhile, the Speaker of the Libyan House of Representatives, Akila Saleh, said election legislation could be finalized and passed in a week, and that he is convinced that balloting will be held on time, hinting at division and chaos or war if it isn't on schedule. Jason Pack, president of Libya Analysis and author of Libya and the Global Enduring Disorder, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
Well, the topics that you mentioned there are quite significant, and holding the elections, getting the budget passed, and the need to get foreign forces, particularly the Russians and the Turks, out of Libya are the significant issues. That said, neither Jan Kubish nor Najla Mangouche, the Libyan foreign minister, has demonstrated any capacity to get follow through on these issues. In fact, Mangouche was in Moscow, cap in hand, begging the Russians about honoring their agreements. And she's been in Turkey on other occasions trying to cajole and get follow through on what was promised more than 8 months ago that the troops would have left. Unfortunately, what this exposes is that neither Kubish nor Mangouche have any leverage. They're just saying, please, mercenaries, leave, or please, let's have elections. And they don't seem to have the levers and sticks and carrots to make it happen.
The Speaker of the Libyan House of Representatives, Aqila Saleh, said election legislations could be finalized and passed in 1 week, and that he is convinced that elections will be held on time next December, but he was hinting at division and chaos or war if elections aren't held on schedule. What do you make of that?
Well, that's very rich of Aqila Saleh to say that the legislations could be finalized and passed in a week, because he is the one who has been delaying the HOR's deliberations and making sure that the elections legislation is not passed. And in fact, Saleh said, oh, we were on the verge of passing the legislation, but we can't do it until Prime Minister Abdelhamid Dbeibah comes to Tobruk and discusses some things with us about the budget. So he's wrapped the budget issue in with the elections as a way to block their happening. He also has shown that Aguila Saleh will do anything to stay in power. He proposed in Cairo at meetings with no less than the American ambassador that if the elections don't happen on December 24th, it's not his fault, and he would work with Fathi Bashagha to make Bashagha prime minister and get rid of Abdelhamid Dbeibah, but that he would stay in his current position. So Aguila Saleh plays all the angles, and whenever something that's supposed to happen doesn't happen, it wasn't his fault.
He also reiterated the need for all foreign forces to depart Libya and called on the international community to sanction Turkey and oblige it to withdraw its forces, hailing at the same time Russia's support for the HOR. What does that mean?
Well, it means that Aguila Saleh is very good at unwitting comedy. You know, when you just express what you want and your true positions, and you don't realize how hysterically funny those are. His biases are quite clear there in showing that the Russians are quote unquote good for supporting the HOR, despite the fact that their mercenaries are still in Libya. But somehow Turkey deserves sanctions for the fact that its forces and trainers are still in Libya. So yes, Aguila Saleh doesn't even know when to hide his true positions because he's the primary spoiler and blocker, both of the budget and of the elections and of getting foreign forces out of Libya. You could say that he is the one man reason why we have the Libyan Political Dialogue Forum process, which was meant to go around him, but has failed to do so. And he has figured out how to be a spoiler of it. So next time on the Aguila Saleh show, how do we actually get to elections and help Libya move forward?
That was Jason Peck, president of Libya Analysis and author of Libya and the Global Enduring Disorder, speaking with VOA's Mohamed Al-Shenawi. Cameroonian and Nigerian authorities have agreed to jointly fight armed separatists in both countries. The nation's top security and government officials announced the deal during an emergency security meeting that ended Thursday in Nigeria's capital, Abuja. The meeting was convened after Anglophone separatists in Cameroon and the indigenous people of Biafra in Nigeria said they would join forces to fight for independence. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Babagana Mungunu, National Security Advisor to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, said Thursday secessionist groups are uniting to destabilize Cameroon and Nigeria. The retired Major General spoke at the end of the eighth session of the Cameroon-Nigeria Transborder Meeting in Nigeria's capital, Abuja. Mungunu says the neighboring states will jointly combat the rebels operating within their borders.
President Muhammadu Buhari reassures you that Nigeria's territory will never be used by any group of secessionists to destabilize another friendly sovereign country. In addition, we will work closely together to ensure that any real or perceived attempt to form any alliances between secessionist groups in Nigeria and Cameroon are decisively dealt with.
Speaking on Cameroonian State Radio CRTV, Mungunu said Nigeria will continue to support the efforts of Cameroonian authorities to stop the separatist crisis in Cameroon's English-speaking western regions. The United Nations says at least 3,000 people have been killed and 550,000 civilians displaced in Cameroon and in Nigeria by the separatist crisis that escalated into an armed conflict in 2017. Top government and military officials from the two countries attended the Abuja security meeting. Governors from the Nigerian states that border Cameroon and Cameroonian regions bordering Nigeria took part. Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji led Cameroon's delegation. Nji says militaries of the two countries are already at work to map out ways of stopping separatists operating in Cameroon and in Nigeria. He says the two countries have decided to provide jobs and improve the livelihoods of people in border areas. He says poverty is driving many civilians to join separatist groups in pursuit of food and better living conditions.
To eradicate transborder insecurity in all its forms, or at least reduce it to the barest minimum, our security forces must intensify intelligence gathering and information sharing. It must include measures to check religious radicalism, foster education, and promote economic and social development projects along our common border.
Ngee said Cameroon is sincerely grateful for Buhari's permanent commitment never to allow any part of Nigerian territory to serve as a safe haven for terrorist and separatist groups against its neighbor Cameroon. This week's Cameroonian-Nigerian security meeting is the first since Cameroon's English-speaking separatists said they were partnering with the indigenous people of Biafra, a group that wants a breakaway state in southeast Nigeria. Capo Daniel is deputy defense chief of the Ambazonian Defense Forces, a rebel group in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest and southwest regions. He says the Ambazonian Defense Forces and indigenous people of Biafra are determined to foster an alliance the Nigerian and Cameroonian separatist groups created in April.
The alliance generates solidarity between the military wing of the IPOB, that is the Eastern Security Network, and the Ambazonia Defense Forces. We will continue to intensify the collaboration in areas such as operating training camps, exchanges in military trainers, open exchange of weapon and military personnel, as well as sharing intelligence across the border.
The indigenous people of Biafra has not issued a statement on the terms of their collaboration with the Ambazonia Defense Forces. Videos shared on social media platforms such as Facebook and WhatsApp do appear to show people claiming to be officials of the rebel group's meeting. Cameroon and Nigeria say rebel and secessionist groups from the two countries have been meeting and trafficking in weapons. Nigeria shares a 1,975-kilometer border with Cameroon. Militaries of the two countries have been jointly fighting violent crises since 2010. Nigeria's northeast states of Borno and Adamawa and Cameroon's far north region on Nigeria's border report regular Boko Haram terrorist attacks. Cameroon says separatists use porous borders to import weapons through Nigeria, and collaboration between the Ambazonia Defense Forces and indigenous people of Biafra is making the security situation very uncertain. Other security challenges include conflicts over illegal exploitation of natural resources, highway robbery, drug and human trafficking, illicit trafficking of firearms, and agricultural conflicts. The Cameroon-Nigeria Transborder Security Committee was created in 2012 in Nigeria to strengthen security in both countries. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The government of Zimbabwe has announced that schools will be reopening next week. The decision has caught many parents and teachers' unions off guard, and many are not welcoming the news. Addie Gondo has more on the story.
At a recent briefing, Information Minister Monica Mtrangwa announced the reopening of schools on Monday, the 30th of August. The government says the reopening will be staggered, with examination classes poised to resume face-to-face lessons, while others will return to class on September 6. The announcement of school reopenings follows a two-week extension of the Level 4 lockdown against COVID by the government. Authorities say that there has been a 32% decrease in weekly infection rates, with cases sliding from 3,761 for the week ending August 15 to 2,564 the following week. The government claims that it made the move after consulting with stakeholders such as the health ministry and teachers' organizations. But observers say that the government acted too quickly and did not give stakeholders enough time to prepare. The unions have also been locked in wage disputes with the government and maintained that their grievances have also not been met. The Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, Takawa Firajo Ukonke, is saying the reopening of schools is not tenable at the moment, raising what he calls the teachers' legitimate demands in terms of their welfare, health and safety, and lack of COVID-19 safety measures in schools like masks and sanitizing machines.
What is clear is that nothing has changed in schools. The 500 million that was allocated for COVID abatement equipment is not filtered to the schools. Several schools have no running water or reliable sources of water. Teachers, who in essence received starvation wages on payday, have exhausted that starvation wage on payday, and if nothing, footing their bills to their respective stations, let alone paying fees for their own children. Ministry should have done better by engaging teachers and coming up with their realistic opening dates.
Joe added that the government sidestepped ongoing consultations between the ministry and teachers in going ahead with the reopenings without meeting. The Agricultural Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe represents rural schools where the greater part of the country's population at 60% resides. The Secretary General of the Union, Obed Masaraore, agrees with Joe.
We just learned on social media that government is now going to be opening schools on the 30th of August. Obviously, they made some claims that the preparations for schools opening had been done extensively. But they fall short when it comes to explaining how are the teachers prepared to teach? How are the learners prepared to learn? How are the parents themselves prepared to fund the education? Since we know that the parents are funding the bulk of the education budget, government only funds for teacher salaries. From our perspective, when it comes to teacher preparedness, the teachers can only be prepared to teach if they receive their pre-October 2018 salaries. Government made a pledge last year in 2020 that by July 2021, they would have restored the value of our pre-October 2018 salaries.
Teachers' unions want the government to revert back to paying teachers in US dollars, citing erosion from hyperinflation. Meanwhile, VOA spoke to parents in Bulawayo in reaction to the government directive. Fortune Moyo, a mother of three school children, welcomes the directive.
I think it's a brave decision by government to reopen schools, and I think it's a welcome development, especially for school children who are writing exams this year. Parents with school children who are candidates were a bit apprehensive. Well, as for vaccination, it's really a tricky situation because there is still the issue of choice for one to get the vaccine or not to get the vaccine. Unless if government suddenly says every teacher should be vaccinated and produce a vaccination card. Yeah, of course, the time frame of saying schools are opening next week and suddenly we have to start looking for school fees. As parents, we'll do that. We'll go in and out here and there and make sure that we get the fees because we do want the kids to go to school.
Another parent, Simba Mparaganda, believes the decision by government was rushed, leading him to raise concerns about COVID-19 infections.
Yes, parents were of the mind that the government should have first inoculated teachers and students and ensure that everything is in place before schools reopen. But basically on the issue of school fees, most parents, were not prepared. And I think there was need for government to give parents, say, 2 weeks or a month.
Local media reports that the Medical Practitioners Association supports the reopening of schools, citing the latest information from the Minister of Health on declining infection and death rates. Still, observers say the reopenings hang in the balance as long as teachers and the government cannot agree on a way forward. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigwando in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the